This project was, there's a heyday from a little bit in the early 2000s, probably more to do with the build out in the Western sedimentary basin for oil and gas, and molybdenum's a key pipeline component. So price of molybdenum skyrocketed and projects advanced. And this was one of the few, the former operator was called ADNOC Molybdenum. And they had, at one point, they had a $300 million market cap, $600 million in funding, and the road was upgraded and the mine went into construction. They, unfortunately, during the financial crisis, went bankrupt. The co-founder of our company bought it from the bankruptcy trustees. He actually called me and said, what do you think about it? It's a great idea. We had no idea we'd form Steheny. And we ended up optioning it from him. We've now completed the options. We own it. And interestingly, moly was, you know, $8 a pound when we got it. Today, it's over 20. And the spot price was 30.
Dave O'Brien, Steheny Exploration. Good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm fine, Rick. Thank you very much. Pleasure being on your show.
Yeah, thanks for coming on here. That is a beautiful picture there. It looks cool, though. But what are we looking at right behind you on your...
Behind me, that's actually, we have a large molybdenum deposit, northern BC near Atlins, road accessible. It's called the Ruby Creek Molybdenum Deposit. It's very advanced. It's sort of shovel-ready, ready to go. And you can see like big porphyry systems. It's kind of a gentle depression, which is what you want to see. Fairly easy to mine. There's no trees, no salmon. The project advanced in construction in the past, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But that's our project. Those roads you see are mostly drill pads.
Got it. Okay. Well, let's start with you then. Start with your background and let's talk about the company. What do you guys tell us what you're all about?
Yeah, myself, my educational background was math and statistics. And I threw my degree out the window and bought a fly fishing business. And I'm very lucky because I have amazing staff members that run it. And it's allowed me to be a venture capitalist for 40 years now. And I'm a sort of no-nonsense venture capital. I run a little bit of a family office and I have a syndicate of guys. And you know, we're pretty serious about this space. And my specialty is mineral exploration. I like to stick to the main commodities and not the Johnny come lately or the hot trends and just bricks and mortars. Like, what type of deposit do you have? How big is it? Is it mineable? Or you're a producer, you're throwing lots of cash. Like, just nuts and bolts, stick to the basics, not the arm waving and one drill wonders and stuff like that. I find that's too risky.
Yeah. Well, it's music to my ears. And I'm very happy to talk to you then. Let's talk about the 30,000 foot view with Steheny. Tell me about it. What exactly are you doing? What are you pulling out?
Yeah, Steheny Exploration is a bit of a unique junior because we optioned the Ruby Creek molybdenum deposit back when molybdenum was, you know, $8, $10 a pound and nobody cared about it. This project was, there's a heyday for molybdenum in the early 2000s, probably more to do with the build out in the Western sedimentary basin for oil and gas. And molybdenum's a key pipeline component. So price of molybdenum skyrocketed and projects advanced. And this was one of the few, the former operator was called ADNOC Molybdenum. And they had, at one point, they had a $300 million market cap, $600 million in funding, and the road was upgraded and the mine went into construction. They, unfortunately, during the financial crisis, went bankrupt. The co-founder of our company bought it from the bankruptcy trustees. He actually called me and said, what do you think about it? It's a great idea. We had no idea we'd form Steheny. And we ended up optioning it from him. We've now completed the options. We own it. And interestingly, moly was, you know, $8 a pound when we got it. Today, it's over 20. And the spot price was 30. We don't use the spot. We use the LME plat. It's gone up a lot. And a few years ago, we said, hey, we have to do a resource update. Now, the last operator had a 43-101 report, but the exchange views that as old. And you throw that out the window. We hired a very conservative firm out of Dallas, out of the U.S. Respec, and they did a resource update. And we have a pit-constrained resource. Nowadays, we report a resource. It has to be a mineable resource, not a global resource. So we have a pit-constrained resource. I only want to refer to the measured and indicated. We have high confidence in the drilling. We have 433 million pounds measured and indicated. I was in a pit that's, you know, about 300 meters deep and kilometer and a half wide. And it's also open in three directions. It's open at depth. And we believe we found a second porphyry behind the mountain behind me, nearby 4 kilometers. But we don't have evidence to prove that's the second porphyry. We have to do more testing, but it makes so much sense. And this is a very unusual deposit. It's a primary high purity molybdenum deposit. And in the Western world right now, 90% of molybdenum production is a byproduct from copper mining. But the end result isn't a high purity product. And for most steel applications like rebar and carbon steel, it doesn't matter. But specialty steel applications, especially the emerging green technologies, in particular hydrogen technology, molybdenum is the catalyst and they need high purity molybdenum. So, you know, with what's going on in the world, it's interesting. But while we're incubating this and looking for a partner, I really like gold and silver. And we visit a lot of projects in the Southwest U.S. We've reviewed at least 10 projects and walked several of them. And we've recently settled on a CRD silver project in Nevada and a lithocap gold target. Good lithocap's hard to find in Nevada as well. We have some very, I won't name many names, but some very experienced consultants that are, you know, very famous that they help us walk these projects and write reports and review these things. So there we are.
Okay. So there are so many directions. You've given us so much information just right now in so many directions that we can go into this. But what I'd like to start with, go back to Mali. As I mentioned to you off camera, I'm aware of Mali. You are one of the few Mali companies that or has a Mali deposit that I'm talking with. Why is Mali so strategic and so important right now?
Well, it's interesting. For one thing, the Chinese, they recently said they're curtailing export on five key elements. One of them is Mali. What's important about Mali is that the big Mali players in North America are like, well, we'll get a byproduct from steel, from copper mining. And the only primary Mali production in North America is Freeport with their Climax and Henderson projects in Colorado. They've recently had some massive cost overruns because water is very difficult in the state and right, not economic right now. But again, Mali is a steel additive. Almost everywhere you look, you see steel. It's an additive anywhere from, even rebar is 0.5%. Most carbon steels are 1 to 2%. What is steel? It's iron and key additives. Mali's unique. It's non-replaceable. It's got very unique molecular properties. You know, the number one use for molybdenum, believe it or not, is lightening and strengthening steel. You want to build a bridge. Steel is very heavy. The more moly you add, the stronger it is. And you go to thinner walls. Even the Europeans in Germany, they're finding by adding more molybdenum to the auto building process, they can lighten it up and strengthen it. And we all know how heavy electric cars are. Where I'm trying to key in on is the fact that we have a rare, high purity primary moly deposit. And it's really the only verified one north of 49 parallel. And in Canada, molybdenum is a strategic metal. And even Canada, the U.S. are, as you're aware, they're having some problems now, and we'll get into that. But it's a very strategic deposit, and it's shovel ready, shallow. And I can only, when I tell you about the deposit, I can only refer to the feasibility study done by the previous operator. But they had a very high metallurgical recoveries. It was very clean and sort of water based and environmentally friendly. And also, it's a green energy metal used in so many green energy applications, right? And so, I encourage people to learn about it. It's also a big market. It's a 630 million pound a year market, which is dollar value, almost the same as nickel. Problem is, it's the realm of the big steel giants, you know, and a lot of these mining companies don't mine molybdenum. And China, they view it more valuable. And I'll be honest with you, I am in discussions with Chinese entities, and they like our project. And it's also, you know, we're 275 kilometers away from Skagway, Alaska, an ice free port. And it's highway driving. Once you're at the bottom of the hill, the Hall Road, you're highway driving all the way there. So it's sort of an Asia sort of strategy going forward.
Yeah. So again, let me talk to my listeners and viewers here. This is quite the strategic metal play. And with everything that's going on in the world, I really like the strategicness of this, if you would, because of just the U.S. relationships with China. If you would, very well, it's a strain to say the least, if you would. And then also with the new administration, again, this is not a political statement with all the tariffs being slapped around on everything. What we're seeing is metals like moly, more than likely, and this is not advice or even me projecting, but I'm just going to say the more than likely become even more expensive and that more valuable. So let me ask you this, Dave, what is really the plan here going out? Talk to me about that. And then also talk to me about you are next to Skagway, you said. And tell me about that and how far are you from really an infrastructure, building an infrastructure or power and that sort of things?
Yeah, good question. We you know, the port of Skagway, Alaska is 250 kilometers from Atlin, BC. And it's highway, you drive north, you cross over by car cross the border, come down to Skagway. That's a nice free seaport. That's the closest port. Now, the railheads might be 400 or 500 kilometers away, and you may concentrate on site. And if you want to target the North American market, there are other alternatives, also ports in British Columbia and Prince Rupert south of us. That's sort of the way we're gonna do things. Our deposit is strategically located. So, obviously the Pacific, China, Thailand, Indonesia is a gateway for India. Those type of markets. And the road, of course, the former operator, this was, it used to be a Forest Service road. and a substantial road upgrade. Ledcor did the upgrade to a haul road. So you leave the mine here, you go down the hill on a haul road, and then you hit paved road, and away you go. So it's well located. So it's exciting. Our plan though right now is we don't say too much about it, but we're seeking strategic alternatives, and it's an ongoing process. And we're reaching out. We've also been approached independently by some entities. And so again, there's no guarantee at all. I mean, we don't mislead anybody. That's what we don't want to do. But I'm excited, and we're working on stuff every day in this regard. And we just want to keep that fairly quiet, a private process. We have announced that to the market, and that's all. If anything happens, we'll announce when it does. Right. We believe we're in a nice spot, especially with what's happened recently. And also what people have to realize is there was a strong Chinese interest in this mine years ago. And Canada-China had very bad diplomatic tiff in 2018. Meng Wanzhou was detained at the airport in Vancouver. They kidnapped the two Michaels. And Canada was almost a pawn between the U.S. and China, but the U.S. wanted Meng Wanzhou for treason and extradition. And she was stayed in house arrest in Canada, and they're really upset China. And they just, no investing in Canada. They don't like our president, who's prime minister, who's now stepped down. I believe now that he's stepped down, Sino-Canadian relations will improve dramatically, even given what Trump's up to as well, right? We have to look elsewhere for our products. And finally, people in Canada using common sense of, hey, we've all these resources, let's extract them. You know, there's a lot of, even the government's starting to change their mind about permitting and environmental assessment and all these things. This project's already been through feasibility study and environmental assessment in the past, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. You can't go into construction without that. So it's very strategic.
Yeah. Steve, what questions did you have? You've mentioned before, just when you invest in other places, you're looking for a project, do you have the goods and management? So could you tell us about your project and the goods that you're getting, and then your management, about your team, the experience that you guys have, and love to know who we'd be investing with?
Yeah, I'm basically a venture capitalist, but I'm very frugal. Like, I watch every penny. I draw $2,000 a month salary, and most CEOs draw considerably more. Normally you pay 150. My motivation is my shareholders. Okay. I have my wife and I have well over 3 million shares. Barry Hanslett, the co-founder, and Eric Sprott are above me. I'm the third largest shareholder. And I'm very frugal because I run a real business on Main Street, right? When we buy flights for PDAC, I buy them on Black Friday. I'm, buying them for less than $200 a year for my staff. And, booking hotels where you had $10 Ubers, but $150 a night instead of $700 a night. I watch every single penny. And that's part of my specialty and my background in business and mining. And I've taken a lot of criticism for not diluting our stock and doing early stage exploration, which is what most juniors do. But we're sitting on a very large asset, and I don't want to be dilutive. And, X number of dollars divided by 46 million shares, which is our current float, is a lot better than X number of dollars divided by 246 million shares, right? And I truly believe the companies have stayed dormant the last couple of years, just survived this winter we've been through, the sort of nuclear winter that's emerging now. I mean, you'll never find better valuations in the resource sector. People want to do their homework. And again, we have a large deposit. When I give people numbers, I'm not using inferred. I'm only using measured and indicated. You can't do feasibility studies, even pre-feas, without measured and indicated resource. You cannot use inferred resources. And we have that. And again, we have all the infrastructure there. The town of Atlin's nearby. There's the power is an issue. And the old feasibility study called for diesel. Certainly we use nat gas because it's a lot cheaper. But there's exciting things going on behind the scenes. I believe there's a lobby to bring the big Site C dam at power to the Yukon, which would be huge for us because we just trunk off the Alaska Highway. And there's an initiative right in Atlin itself to raise Surprise Lake to get more power, whereby possibly we could have power in the summer months. And the idea is when there's summer months where you get very cheap power, you crush your hard ore and you do power-intensive applications. In the wintertime, you go to less power-intensive applications, go off the grid. And maybe the world will even change and go to small vessel reactors. This is still 4 or 5 years away. Again, use common sense, right? We have to use common sense. But it is changing all these things. It's exciting behind the scenes. And there you have it.
Yeah. Is there anything? Steve, do you have anything else? No, Dave, just want to confirm that you guys have about, almost 40% insiders who own this?
Yeah, we officially have 39.6 inside, which is very, very tight. And we have 46.5 million shares outstanding. Even the inside position is tighter than that, simply because I have a bit of a syndicate investor buddies. And these guys were in our seed round, and they've been around since day one. And I've got a group of 5 or 6 people with over a million. So it's probably well over 60%, because a lot of it's just really, really tightly held by long-term investors trying to monetize this. And, it's starting to trade a little bit more. And You know, and there's a nice float out there. There's a lot of strange stock out there, and you know, that's, but it is very tightly held, and we haven't diluted for a couple of years. So we, you know, we're just guarding our treasury really carefully. And again, we're excited to be able to find some precious metals opportunities. I really believe that I like the Southwest US, I like Nevada, I like Arizona. And I think that there's still, things are really cheap. So now, now as a company, we can grab things while they're out of favor, because when they come into favor, they'll be much more valuable. It's all about creating value for your shareholders, right? But we are unique in the sense we're sitting on a very unusual large asset that's very advanced. Basically, they've got a bow tie on it, sort of shovel ready.
Yeah. So Dave, tell me about, you do have a very, very tight shareholder, structure, I must say. If people want to know more about you, how do they find you and where do they buy you and what exchanges are you on?
Yeah, if they just go to our website and look at our deck, our corporate presentations, my email, my phone, I always have time for investors. If they want to personally talk to me, I always make the time because everything is really important. Every investor counts. And I, you know, I obviously I'm a very busy guy, and but I always have time for investors, so they can reach out to me directly. Yeah, I'm more than happy to do that. We trade on the TSX Venture under the symbol STU. And we trade on the OTCQB under the symbol STXPF. And I'd like to see more shares trade in the U.S. side. And again, we haven't done any marketing at all for a couple of years because it hasn't been time. I'm excited now because, again, there's an interest in strategic metals. And again, so many companies are waving their arms. They got a chip sample or one drill in the ground. You know, it's, you know, as an investor, I'm not interested in that. I want to buy projects that have the goods, or mines that are already built, or deposits that are already defined. You know, you don't have to take chances, right? And obviously, yeah. Because I've been in the business all my life, if I see, as an investor, if I see a spectacular drill hole and I go, wow, it's a mineable drill hole, that looks like something special, I always try to get in early, right? Ahead of the crowd, right? People are too, you know, we talk about us, we're probably trading at $2 a share and say, what do you think is Tahini? And say, well, why weren't you interested in it when it was trading at 12 cents, right? And that's just how people are. It's funny how that works, right? Once your stock moves up, people want to buy, and at the bottom they want to sell, and that's what I find very interesting about investing.
Yes, so a little bit about that, I would absolutely say yes. I have seen it that the people in the U.S. are no different than the people in Canada or the people in the rest of the world when it comes to that. So they all jump on. It's hot.
If there's one message I want to give to people out there, like you know, learn about mineral exploration. Do your homework, learn what a resource is, learn about share the valuations and things. Like, for example, in gold, I'm trying to find quality gold deposits trading at less than, say, $15 an ounce, right? Where, you know, but it all makes sense. And also, everyone's been riding the, you know, the Magnificent Seven and the Bitcoin, all these things. And we all know how those things typically end. And also valuations are extreme. But in our sector, I've never seen it so undervalued. You know, we're buying gold juniors in 2007. Gold was $700 an ounce. We're paying $100 per in-situ ounce in the ground. Gold's not 700 today, it's 2,900. And I could buy gold in the ground for still less than $10 an ounce. It's crazy. And with the finding cost is 10 times that. You know, so there's a tremendous opportunity. Take some of those earnings and beware, but you're also dealing with a very dangerous overvalued top. And I got out of stocks in a year early, you know, in 1990, the tech bubble. I just said, this doesn't make sense. These PEs and price to raise sales ratio, they're all out the moon. I'm out. And people say, oh, you're stupid and you're foolish and it's different now. And I know people lost their houses and lost their marriages. But now's the time to take a little bit of those profits and do your homework and buy quality companies in the junior mining space, because they're cheap. And that will be, I truly believe companies like, I won't mention any companies, they're big silver producers. In 5 years, they'll be the next NVIDIA. They'll be 100 times these prices. Silver will be over $100 an ounce. And but man, can you imagine if I bought an XYZ mining back when it was $1 a share, now that it's 200? And this is because gold and silver are real money. And also the nickel and molybdenum and copper, these are real things. And everywhere you look, you either grow it or you mine it. And the world's completely ignored mining. And there's this, and you can't, like a mine, the average mine, if you and I are walking through the woods, we find an outcrop, on average, be 20 years so we're producing. Whereas the oil and gas sector, I can spud a well and be pumping money within 3 months, right? And you need all the permitting and all the time. And no one's going to invest billions of dollars building Ruby Creek unless they're very comfortable, because a long-term proposition, right? And there's going to be tremendous shortage in this space. And people, you can't just snap your fingers and get copper. And it's a perfect storm. So anyway.
It really is. I cannot agree with you more. Dave O'Brien, pardon me, Stuhini Exploration. I want to thank you so much. Very enlightening. And you are sitting on just an incredible asset that is highly, highly undervalued. I do appreciate you very much coming on, and we'll put everything in the show notes, your website, as well as the ticker symbols. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Steve and Andy. It's a real pleasure. I'm very honored to be introduced by you guys, and I look forward to meeting in person soon. And buy low, sell high.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.